Hi, everybody. I'm Emily.
And I'm Vince.
And this is the Lighthouse Lowdown. Wish people could see our dance moves during that.
They could. We could do video.
No.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody wants to see my facial expressions.
I think they do. And they do. And they would also be seeing me with my coffee I just made. And my work clothes.
Also, for me, sometimes it ruins it knowing what a person looks like because their face may not match their voice or something.
Do you think that would help our case or hurt our case?
Are you saying, what are you saying?
Who knows?
I guess our face is over on our Instagram anyway, so.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, I do have a history buoy today.
Buoy.
It popped up during my research for the episode, so. We can have it. It'll appear a little later.
Like a natural buoy. Nice.
Yeah. All natural. All natural.
I like to put the buoys later. I did that once and it worked.
What do you mean you like doing that?
I did it once and it worked. That's what I mean.
I disagree with this concept, but I will let you do whatever creative wind takes you.
Thanks.
Welcome. So, history buoy is sounding. Have you heard of that?
No, okay. I don't think so.
You looked like you were going to say something.
I think I've heard of it, but I can't recall what I think it is.
Okay. It is a method for measuring the depth of a body of water at different points.
Yes.
Which is important. And it's probably something you heard when you were doing the casein.
No, we talked, well, yes, but okay. Also we talked about sounding when we talked about what a knot is. We were talking about nautical,
really?
I think, well, a long time ago. And then there was the beginning of the movie King Kong we were talking about.
That's right, yeah.
Sounding. But yes, please remind us.
Okay, it's a pretty short buoy. But I have a picture. Because usually these measurements are shown as just numbers on a map. It's a good way to determine if there are shallow areas and stuff. But it's also used when a lighthouse would have like a wooden crib that fit to a shoal, so they would carefully measure the area to build a structure offsite that would fit on the shoal when they tow it to site. So
okay,
don't have to spend all that time on the ocean when you could just take some measurements, do it offshore, and then tow it back out there.
Yeah.
So I pulled up a picture of what one of those might look like. So it would be helpful while you're sailing to know where the areas of shallow water are. And the old way that they used to measure this, which can still be used today, but obviously it just takes a lot longer than modern technology, was to attach a weight to a line and then drop it through the water until it hits the ground. They would mark on the rope where the water line is mm-hmm. while it's resting and then take it up and measure it above water. And they would either do this in feet or fathoms, and fathoms is just 6 feet. So
6 foot to 1 fathom.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, this is cool. It's like a topographical map, except
reverse.
Inverted.
The modern way is to use sonar, which uses sound waves, and then they use the time that it takes for the wave to return to calculate what the depth is.
I wonder if there's data collection going on out there to build, like Garmin, for example. Garmin builds fish finders and also GPS for diving and mm-hmm. boats. I wonder if there's a database on soundography. I'm making that word up.
Yeah, but. Like where like anytime someone takes a measurement, it's like in their database or something. That would,
for example,
Pokemon
Go.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
I saw an article today. Pokemon Go. I guess this was always the plan. So some people are saying, oh, this is always the plan. It's not a secret. But to me, it was new. They are data mining and they always have been. That was always the plan. So they got people to walk around in real life with their phones to play this Pokemon game.
Yeah.
And they put specific Pokemon interest areas mm-hmm. where they didn't have data. And that data is being used for AI and automated driving and AI vehicles and AI machines.
Well, they need to make their GPS system better then. Well,
but they did it on purpose. They put poor GPS, like, locations there on purpose. So as you're walking around like a teenager or you're in your car, you're not supposed to be, but you're helping to map their new system. So they just sold that for probably hundreds of millions of dollars, that data collection.
Wow.
And they made money the whole time on selling in-game data. Yeah, all that. So I wonder if Garmin doesn't have, not that that's evil and not that Garmin's evil, but if they don't have some data mining going on with all of their technology.
Yeah, because don't they have like boat technology for like finding fish and stuff? Okay, so that's probably also like sonar sounding sort of thing.
I think it is, exactly. Yeah.
Cool.
Pretty neat stuff.
But that's it. They use that at the lighthouse we're talking about today, which is the Wagashants Lighthouse.
You said that confidently.
Thank you.
The Wagashants.
I listened to the guy who owns the organization that owns the lighthouse say it a few times.
Nice.
So I think that's the best way. Wagashants.
That's the best way to do it.
So I don't know if you recognize the name of this lighthouse, but we talked about it very briefly in our old Mackinac Point Light episode. And this is another listener lighthouse. So thank you to Travis for leaving a voicemail on our website and suggesting that we cover this lighthouse.
Very good.
We love voicemails. They're so goofy, and you can tell people are like, so, like,
yeah.
Hello, I'm Emily.
Do we have one of those buttons where they can go back and redo it? Or is it just like, you know?
I'm not sure.
Probably not, is probably what I'm guessing. So, or,
yeah, I guess I've never left a voicemail on our website, so I don't know how it is.
Well, the company we work for, we work at separate divisions, but the company, we had these digital interviews.
And
I did not get the job after my digital interview, but you get like a 1 minute to record yourself answering a question. Then it was like, you get one more chance. It's like so much pressure. So thank you. Is it
Travis?
Travis. Very good.
Yeah. We love it. So we are heading back to Lake Michigan. Sorry to everybody.
The Great Lakes.
I tend to cover Lake Michigan and Maine a ton. I don't know what is happening.
There's a lot of lighthouses there.
I know, but
a lot of them.
That doesn't inherently mean, I don't know, I think I'm drawn to Maine lighthouses, which is funny because I've never been there. Anyway, Vince is just looking at me.
It's on the list.
Maine?
Yeah, but it's, yeah.
I know, we're going to go northwest and then, well, in many years from now, I guess we'll do whatever I want to do.
Hey. Baloney.
I'm just kidding. We did what we wanted, what I wanted to do this year.
And it was great.
So now you plan the next one. We've started a system. I guess.
You planned the last one.
I know. I'm just poking fun at you. Okay. We're in Lake Michigan. Wagashants Point ends 7 miles out into the lake, and it's full of shallow shoals and small islands. I have a picture from Google Maps. So this north of Sturgeon Bay is where we have Wagashants Point. And there's also the little disconnected, the far one is, I think it's the far one, is Wagashants Island. And little bits and very shallow water all around there.
Mackinac City.
Yes, the little star on there is where our old Mackinac Point is. So
nice.
It's on there. $5,000 was appropriated in 1837 for a lighthouse marking this like little islandy point, which was originally planned for being on the mainland. So like still on the point, you know, where it sticks out into the water, but not on one of the islands. However, they did a survey, as they do before they decide to build a lighthouse, and it showed that the light would be better served out into the lake more to mark where boats were safe to travel, which makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Why would you smack a lighthouse in the middle of an area where you really should mark the end where people go around?
Yeah. The middle, I guess if you put it more inland, you could just say, hey, stay far away from this light.
Yeah.
But then it makes it so inconvenient. And
they're having to take measurements and whatever. Just aim for the lighthouse and go around it.
There you go.
I feel like that's a better way to go.
Just got
to
know which side you're on.
Yeah, right. So that's what they decided to do. So I have a picture. There's Gray's Reef Lighthouse, and above that I put a little pin where Wagashants is.
Wow. I expected it to be on Wagashants Island. Mm-hmm.
I know. It's actually far out because Google Maps doesn't show all the shallow areas. So although they're showing the visual islands, there's a lot of ground underneath that, like reefs and shoals and all that don't show up on the map. So I found where it is based on longitude and latitude. And
wow, so science.
It took me a long time to find it on the map because Google doesn't make it easy. You can't just type in latitude this, longitude that. It won't come up with any results. So you have to like click around. Okay, preface this to say that I probably don't know that there is an easier way to do this. So anyway, that's where our lighthouse is. And I don't know it.
Is Gray's Reef shown on the map because it's another significant lighthouse probably?
Yes, and also it's the reason why our lighthouse today is not showing on Google Maps is because it's technically ruins.
Oh.
Yeah, so.
Shame.
This Gray's Reef light came decades after Waugashance was out of service. So that's why it's so close.
You said Waugashance, we're talking 1830s?
Yeah.
For the allocation at least.
Right. So yeah. So when it was first like, hey, we need a lighthouse here because we had a lightship, the Lois McLean, which had been anchored near Waugashance Shoal for 5 years and as actually the first lightship on the Great Lakes. So.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So Lois. A little bit of fun history there. But the light was hard to keep on during harsh weather because, you know, a ship whips around with the waves.
Right.
And needed to be a towed away for the winter and spring because of ice. So they needed something more permanent. And that also meant that they could reallocate the Lois McLean to somewhere that needs a lightship.
I wonder, I don't mean to take us off track, but maybe in the future I'll look into it. When they took these lightships off station because of the weather, did trade in the region like stop? Like were merchants not running Lake Superior?
That's a good question because they couldn't Michigan. In through ice. It's solid ice.
It must maybe they did like this sounds so stupid, I'm sure, but like sledding dogs, like you know, maybe that crazy. Business picked up during the wintertime or yeah, people maybe, just sheltered in place. I really don't know.
Yeah, maybe they just stopped shipments during the winter. We should look that up. That would be a good good history buoy.
Well, that's one of the reasons there's so many wrecks in the Great Lakes. Is because there's so much ship traffic.
True.
I don't know. We have people we could ask who are literally professionals.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if that was seasonally, you know, every fall,
everything 80% shut down.
Of the wrecks happened because people had to get their last shipment in or something.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah. Open question. Kind of cool.
Look more into that. So because they changed their plans, originally the lighthouse was going to be on the mainland. Now it's going to be on a reef. They needed a lot more money in order to build it. So Congress sent another $25,000 in 1838 and then $38,000 more in 1848.
We never learned a budget.
And another $20,500 in 1850.
This is a very expensive lighthouse.
And there was a solid 12 years between, or like 13 years before, between the first allocation of money and the last one. So it took them that long to get around to like actually building the thing. But you also remember this was early on in like building caissons and cribs and stuff. So I'm not surprised that it would take that long. The area that they wanted to build on was between 4 and 12 feet of water.
Okay.
So like it's rocky, you know, it's dangerous. Up and down.
Yeah.
And so they did soundings in order to build a white and yellow pine crib on nearby St. Helena Island. Let's see if I have it.
And they did all that sounding work with rope and weight at that time.
Mm-hmm. It's this one up here.
That's pretty neat.
It made it into my picture. So they would, they built it on St. Helena and then towed it. I think they said it was like 14 miles back to where the rock was that they were building on. The bottom of the crib up to the waterline was filled with concrete, and on top, and I took a quote from Lighthouse Friends, because I don't know too much about what any of this really means, but I figured it's probably, I can just put the information out there. And on top, quote, large blocks of hammer-dressed Sandusky limestone set in hydraulic cement were used to form 16-foot-tall bases for the tower and dwelling that rose 4 feet above the deck of the crib.
Cool.
This work began in earnest in 1848, but in 1849, they started working on the tower because they finished the crib. They used yellow Milwaukee brick to build a circular tower with a story and a half keeper's dwelling connected by a 2-foot walkway. So like somewhere else they referred to it as an integral lighthouse, but I think since there's just, even though it's just 2 feet, I feel like they're, if you're referring to it as a walkway, then they're not actually connected. I would consider this not to be an integral lighthouse.
2 feet is not even enough space to open a door.
Interesting.
At least a standard door today.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even think about how small 2 feet is.
I mean, you could have them both open, swing into the buildings, which is likely what they did.
Yeah.
But that's close.
Yeah, I guess you'd want to keep them separate if you're like heating your home. You're like, I don't want to heat the entire lighthouse tower by...
Let's put in a door.
Yeah, I guess.
I don't know. At least it was close. You know, short commute.
Yeah. Just a little walk. The wooden pier around the light station was 90 by 100 feet and was 12 feet above water, covered in thick oak planks. And I don't actually have a picture of it before the oldest picture that I have.
Okay.
So I have a drawing of like original plans for it.
Beautiful.
Yeah. It is nice. I like the dome top. It's very old fashioned for a lighthouse, I feel. It still looks like that today, but there's some differences that I don't want to just put on the screen until I talk about them.
Okay. I see a ladder or steps on the center view.
Yeah.
And on the left view. Are those facing away from the keeper's house?
Not sure.
Maybe they're for emergencies.
I don't actually know what the layout is referring to. And I also don't know how old these drawings are, so maybe it was before they had decided everything and it was just like a general sketch.
I think I take it for granted, a lot of people do now, but the quality of these drawings done by hand.
Oh, I know.
It's really incredible.
It's so funny to be impressed by like straight lines, but if you think about it, they're artists as well as engineers. But yeah, you can see in the bottom right the shape of the original pier, which changes.
Okay.
In 1850, an iron spiral staircase was added to the 76-foot-tall light tower. So 76 is pretty good. Especially, like, normally we have little lighthouses.
On the open water, yeah.
Along with its lantern room, a boathouse, a woodhouse, fog bell, and a boat crane that they added. So they just finished it up by, like, adding all the extra stuff. And then in 1851, Wagashant's light was operational, sporting a third-order lens, which they replaced with a fourth-order with a white flash every 90 seconds, sometime before 1858. But I couldn't. They actually don't even have the light list on USLHS anymore. So,
wow.
I know. A head keeper was the only one at the light for the first 2 years of operation, resulting in a lot of keeper turnover because it was so isolated and lonely.
Yeah.
And by 1853, they added a first assistant. Oh my gosh. First assistant position with a second added in 1856. Every couple of years, they were like, let's just add another one.
A little bit more money.
Which is interesting because they built a keeper's house not planning to have that many people. So I didn't see anything about it, but I'm interested to know if it was difficult living. And I'm sure this was a stag station, so they wouldn't have families.
Well, and they're on a crib as well, so there's nowhere to go.
Yeah.
You can't go take a walk. Can you imagine?
Oh, how cramped you would feel that you can't go on a walk.
Nowhere to go.
By 1860, the wooden crib needed some serious help. And while they originally thought they needed only $11,000 in order to fix it, they did a thorough examination, which you should do, and found out that they needed $200,000 in order to fix it. Because really, they just needed to build a new one. And like the fact that the lighthouse is already there.
It was at a loss.
Yeah, it makes it seriously problematic. But the Lighthouse Board urged Congress to give them the money, saying the need for Wagashants was, quote, second to none in the lake region, which I would agree with. The area is very shallow and unpredictable.
Yeah, I mean, and this is a little silly, but first glance I took at the map, you know, this is where I'd take my boat and I would have wrecked.
Yeah.
I would have sunk it.
I know. It's like, oh, it's far enough away from the islands that there's probably no shallow area, but they're just in the middle of nowhere. You never, and even the area that it was built on, 90 by 100 feet, ranged from 4 to 12 feet of water. That's like a significant difference.
Yeah.
So after they received the funds, because Congress did give them $200,000, it was decided to build an elliptical stone pier instead of the wooden square one. I'm not really sure why.
Hmm.
Like an oval, but equal. Squished circle.
I don't know. Maybe there was some cost benefit to having some straight lines going on.
Or maybe like, maybe there's some sort of like when waves hit it or when ice hit it, it's stronger to have curves than the square or the square original.
Stress distribution is optimized in a circle.
Mm-hmm.
So the closer you are to a circle, the best you can distribute.
Interesting. And forces. Yeah, earlier I said circle foundation. I meant square.
Okay.
It was square. That was my bad.
Cool.
So the excavation teams worked in an iron cofferdam.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I feel like we talked about it, but the words are not clicking. With an airlock in an attempt to reach bedrock for their foundation to sit on. This project was the first time a pneumatic process was used to sink a caisson foundation for a lighthouse. Very interesting. After they had reached 15 feet into the ground and not reached bedrock, they were like, I think we're done.
Oh, no.
They were just like, we'll quit here. So they halted excavation in 1868 and just were like, this will be good enough. Which, it's still standing, so it was good enough. But it's funny when they're like, we're reaching bedrock. And they're like, 15 feet's probably good.
That's crazy. Yeah, if you want to hear more about cofferdam and caissons,
mm-hmm.
go check out the last episode on Baltimore Harbor.
Yeah.
We talked about that
two episodes ago, 65. Go check out
65. 2 ago, we are flying.
Well, I know. Recording a lot pre-holidays.
But yeah, 15 feet under, they may have, you know, determined this is not bedrock, but look how solid it is.
Yeah, I think it was a lot of rock, and there were like big boulders that they were breaking up and moving. So it's just kind of like
very expensive.
A year later, the foundation pier was laid inside the cofferdam, and a stone pier was built on top, and a new keeper's dwelling was built for $12,000 because they figured, why not? Oh, that's probably, they made it probably bigger for more keepers at that point.
Oh, I hope so.
However, less than a decade later, we are once again in trouble. The Lighthouse Board noted the station was, quote, entirely out of repair and, quote, needing $25,000 for more work. So we are just, it is just a money sucker. we're still not even into the 1880s, and well, it's like hundreds of thousands of dollars.
What was the cause of the need for these repairs?
This one was the actual tower and the dwelling that were like falling into disrepair. So they encased both in iron sheets.
Oh my gosh.
And added a new steam fog whistle. And they also added a new lens that was fixed, illuminating all the way around with work completed in 1884. So it took them a long time to get all of that enacted.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Jumping ahead into the 90s, 1893, the dwelling needed a new roof and paint, which they did in horizontal white and red bands, including the tower, which this is the first time I have a picture of the lighthouse. So you can definitely see the original design in there, but the keeper's house is probably a lot bigger. It's more space than you would think.
See, that looks like a full operation.
Yeah.
Like a well-built
See, yeah, that's
wall,
the boathouse in front there.
A big house, multiple chimneys, full tower, clad in iron.
Yeah.
Yeah. That looks expensive.
Mm-hmm. I know. And I'm interested, it shows the square on the outside, but you can see on the inside the elliptical actual foundation pier. So there was some difference between the two, and maybe that ladder you saw earlier was coming down to this. Like, it looks like just a spot, like a barrier for ice. So
yeah, maybe.
Like that slope kind of shape. They also changed the light characteristic to a white flash every 45 seconds. And so they didn't change the lens or anything. They just added two flash panels that rotated around the light. So it gave it the illusion of flashing with a fixed lens.
I feel like they're changing flash patterns all the time.
I know. I think it's because they were adding more lighthouses around the area.
Must be.
3 years later, they added a large... Oh, here it is. Obviously, okay, in my defense, I took these notes all in one sitting. It took me like, how long was it? Because you fell asleep at 7:30.
A day?
It took me like 5 hours straight sitting to take these notes. So some of the details.
Pretty quick.
All right, what are you saying?
I spend a lot of time on episodes. They're not better. I just spend more time.
Well, your notes scare me. When I look at your notes, you just copy and paste things from
I don't read the whole thing, though.
No, I'm saying you copy and paste important things from resources and then reference those as you speak.
Mm-hmm.
My brain, I'm a bullet point person. It's got to be in my own words, because if I'm reading something, it's going to be obvious.
Yeah, I don't write a script.
You know, whenever I'm like quoting stuff, I'm like, second to none in the Lake region.
Nice.
So you found something. Yeah, 1896, they added a large concrete protecting pier around the outside, presumably for ice.
Oh.
Yeah, so there it is.
There you go.
This big square with the sloping sides. 2 miles north of this lighthouse is White Shoal Lighthouse, which we cover in episode 58. Its construction was completed in 1910, causing Waugashants to discontinue in 1912.
Wait. White Shoals is way up there.
It's 2 miles.
So White Shoals must be where ships were routed to hug White Shoals, rather than here to avoid this.
I don't remember what the notes were, but I have this vague memory that you were supposed to go tight around White Shoals.
White Shoals, I remember, was a bastard to build as well.
Yeah. But it's much larger and more powerful than this lighthouse. So then they built it and they're like, we don't need it. I have a picture from 1931 so at this point it had been discontinued for almost 20 years.
Wow.
But it shows it's a good picture of the iron shell they put around the entire thing.
Oh, those are rivets. That's cool.
And even the windows, you can see that they can bar them closed, but they're also made of metal. It's pretty cool. And it makes sense. If you're closing up shop for the winter, then you got to protect your windows.
Yeah, porthole window, it looks like, or maybe that's an air intake exhaust. And then shutters that are steel.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's riveted. It's so funny. I just think of welding.
Yeah. How things have changed.
Oh, man, that is crazy.
So it held up well for a long time. I have another picture later that shows.
This is the 30s, 1930s?
The picture, yeah, 1931.
So it's a 100-year-old light station at this time.
Yeah.
Almost.
Almost, yeah.
Crazy.
1943, during World War II, the Navy used many Lake Michigan islands to train naval forces, including the islands of Waugashants. And Lake Michigan was used since the ocean was unsafe, you know, because war and all.
Yeah.
And the German U-boats and all of that. And so they converted 2 luxury liners, stripped of their first 2 cabins, and given 500-foot wooden flight decks. So they converted 2, like, cruise ships into...
aircraft carriers?
Yes. Oh, my gosh. I don't have the word, and I guarantee it's not written anywhere in my notes.
Aircraft carrier.
I have a picture, but it was...
with wood deck?
So there's a picture up top of what they used to look like, and then when they were converted.
Man, we did some cool stuff.
I know. So the C and B and the Greater Buffalo were transformed into the USS Wolverine and the USS Sable.
That's really neat.
I know. How cool that you can just convert. It just like doesn't click to me that it would be... How? Like, did they gut the inside? There's almost no similarities between the first and the second ship.
It's so funny.
Uh-huh.
There's a sidetrack.
Okay.
Just cut it later if you want.
I'm ready.
There's some ships that my dad, I think Iowa-class battleships, mm-hmm. I think that's what they were called, but they were built in World War II towards the end. And they didn't see a lot of action, is what I understood. But we had them as museums, like these, I think these 2 or 3 ships that were like, literally you can walk around, the war's over, it's been 20 years.
Yeah.
And then there was some conflict in the 80s, Desert Storm, I think.
Okay.
I know very little of this, clearly. But these ships were converted, they were upfitted with armor and modern weapons at the time.
Why is that so cool?
We redeployed them.
Oh my gosh.
And they ended up actually firing their like long gun cannons.
Oh my gosh.
So there's images with 1980s quality over like from an airplane
mm-hmm.
of the battleships firing at the land. I don't know even where.
But yeah. They still got it.
Pretty cool. Like
that's so neat.
There's a concept that was actually drawn up to further employ modern technology with these ships because they were already built.
Yeah.
It wasn't taken up, luckily.
Are they still, can you still see?
I think they were retired and dismantled.
Man.
I think so. I can go find it later. It's a sidetrack.
Went backwards a little there.
Other military re-ups, upfitting. That's really interesting.
That happened with light ships, too. There was a couple instances of merchant ships being turned into light ships. So it happened around. It's probably a huge cost saver, even though I can't really wrap my head around how you would turn a luxury liner into a aircraft carrier. But anyway, pilots would take off from Glenview Airport, which is just outside of Chicago, and land on these ships to practice landing on aircraft carriers.
Wow.
And at this time, the secret Stag One drone program began in 1943, teaching pilots to remote control unmanned aircraft with bombs, our first drones.
1940s?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
How did they do that? We didn't
just
have...
Just radio controlled. And they were very difficult. I mean, they only used them the next year like a few times. And the hit rate was like 50%. And so they didn't
know about this technology.
Mm-hmm. There's a ton of information on it. And I'm going to have it in my show notes if anyone's interested in reading about it. I read the whole thing, but I didn't take notes on all of it, so... Obviously, the thing we're focused on in the lighthouse. And guess who else was focused on the lighthouse? Because you got to practice aiming at something with your stinking drones.
No way.
Yeah, our poor, lovely Waugashan's lighthouse was the target for their practices. And after many hits and a resulting fire that ended up gutting everything inside the lighthouse, it is left only as a shell of its former self.
Yeah, it's a surprise when you bomb your own stuff, what happens to it.
I know.
Although I'm still impressed.
We just kind of have a skeleton of the lantern room, the shell. This picture is old.
Steel hanging down.
Yeah, maybe the 60s or something.
Black and white.
So yeah, the shell casing started to peel away.
Damn, they bombed the lighthouse. There was no other island out there with nothing on
repeatedly.
It.
Repeatedly. I'm like, oh, it's rude.
I guess the government owned it, right?
But at that point, it had been built for 100 years.
Plus years.
Why? You'd think you would still, I guess, I don't know. I would still see it as something historical. But if nothing's protecting it, then the military kind of has a lot of leeway with the things they practice on. We've seen it several times, like just bomb it.
The military owns the lighthouse at this time, so.
Coast Guard.
Crazy. Sad.
Sad. In 2006, the Coast Guard deemed the remains of Waugashan's to be excess, clearly, and offered it up for no cost by the National Historic Lighthouse Preservation Act of 2000, which we talked about in a previous episode.
Sure did.
It wasn't for another 5 years that someone finally stepped up to do something, because nobody was going to take this for no reason. So two U.S. senators announced that three Michigan lighthouses, South Haven Pierhead Light, Middle Island Light, and Waugashan's Light would be transferred to local preservation groups. So I don't know if that meant they could skip the whole process, but Waugashan's Lighthouse Preservation Society stepped up and were working to restore the lighthouse. But in 2021, the nonprofit dissolved after they concluded that the lighthouse couldn't be saved. Because in 2019, there was like record high water levels in Lake Michigan, and they like check on it because, you know, it's so far out there. They're checking once in a while, and they found that the water had knocked out a lot of the stones that are on its foundation. So like even here in this picture, you can tell it's not in very good shape.
No, it's been bombed.
I mean. I know, but oh, I think I have a picture. I took a screenshot. I watched a news, like a news story they did on it. You can just see it's just like eating away into, at some point it's going to be a critical, some cavity here, and it's going to tip into the lake. So
that's sad. Rip.
So they dissolved because they learned that it would cost $300,000 just to protect the base temporarily for a single year. And they're like, okay, we can't, that's even just to keep it as it is for that long. Not even.
There's only so many resources available, even if you have all the care in the world. There's just...
So I've got a picture up of... It's... I can't remember what these birds are called. It's a word... it's a type of bird I haven't heard of before. But they nest there. It's like,
it doesn't
fine,
look real.
You guys have it. I know. It looks like something, like a prop from a movie or something.
Yeah.
But also the insane.
Chimney. Whoever built that chimney did a damn good job.
Yeah. Got through bombings, fires.
It looks new. Hundreds, everything else looks like hell.
Hundreds of years of ice and wind. And hang in there. So I mean, still hope, obviously, that somebody's going to like step up and restore it, because the Coast Guard suggested they demolish it. And they're like,
nah.
I can't remember who. Somebody was like, we're not going to do that because there's still a chance that somebody could fix it. And I'm like, I think it is too far gone. Because too far gone because nobody has the money to put to. I mean, this would be multi-million-dollar.
Yeah, you'd have to. I mean, I do not know. You'd have to start with a big casing that just dries and isolates this.
Yeah.
And then you could work within the casing to start building a new lighthouse. I don't think. I mean, think about the tower.
Mm-hmm.
Think about a structure that's been literally attacked. I keep saying bombed. Let's say it's been targeted with guns or whatever. I don't know what they did.
Right.
But something happened to it.
Mm-hmm.
It lost its metal, steel casing. I don't know how a structural engineer is supposed to say, yep, we can put new brick on the outside of this. Like, are you going to x-ray the whole thing?
Right.
Like, I mean, that's a real question.
Mm-hmm.
Because how do you confirm this is structurally safe where people from the public could access this space again?
Right. That you'd feel comfortable with people walking in there.
It's like, I don't know.
And also looking at this photo, it appears the metal casing is still on there, but the one that was on the tower peeled off. But there's still, I was looking at that hole in the side and I was that looks like metal.
Crazy.
It's kind of hidden under all the bird poop.
Well, you never know who's going to come along.
Yeah, there could be somebody.
Maybe somebody passes away and they had a couple $1 million they left for the specific use here. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Somebody wins a lottery and this is their thing, you know?
High hopes. Maybe someday. Or it'll be the end of yet another lighthouse.
No one's going and climbing that thing now.
Oh, no. Like,
there's no need to.
There's no stairs.
There's no need to knock this down.
It's unfortunate. That is the story of Wagashant's Lighthouse. Hoping one day that somebody will step up and, you know, take one for the team and rebuild this thing.
It's neat that you can still, you know, from a boat or presumably a plane, you can still see an item that was started in the 1830s.
Mm-hmm.
That's really neat.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is pretty. It's just decrepit.
It's a unique build.
It's very pleasing to look at. So, yeah. Sorry, that was a bummer.
It had a cool history, at least.
Yeah. Thank you to our listener for suggesting it, because we knew about it, but I was like, ah.
That's right.
You give us reasons to look deeper into lighthouses, specific ones, and they always turn out to be interesting. Well, thank you for listening in to yet another Lighthouse Lowdown episode. You can check out our Instagram at The Lighthouse Lowdown, our website, thelighthouselowdown.com, where you can watch videos, listen to our podcast, leave reviews, which we love, leave voicemails, send us messages, all that jazz, all in one place. Are you ready?
Yeah, thanks for hanging out.
Yeah. We'll catch you next time on The Lighthouse Lowdown.
Nice. With gusto.